Welcome to Justice Visions, the podcast about everything that is new in the domain of transitional justice. Justice Visions is hosted at the Human Rights Center of Ghent University. For more information, visit justicevisions.org.
Welcome to this new episode of Justice Visions. My name is Tina Stroper, and I'm the regular host of this podcast and the director of the Justice Visions Research Project. And today we'll be talking about historical commissions and their relationship with transitional justice. And we're having this conversation not so much because the historical commissions themselves are a new phenomenon, they're not, but we're having the conversation because the commissions have increasingly been framed as instances of transitional justice, using the logic, using the rhetoric of transitional justice, and that is new. So we felt it was time to think and to talk a bit more about what that framing does, both for how these commissions operate and what their normative objectives are, but also for what it means for the field of transitional justice, that these commissions are now drawn into that TJ orbit. So there is a lot to talk about, and with us today to have that conversation are Sira Pai Aspero, who is a member of the Justice Visions team. Welcome, Sira.
Thank you, Tina.
And Sira, you just finalized the manuscript of your book on historical commissions, which is an excellent occasion to dive into that subject with you and with our second guest, who is Dr. Alexander Karn from Colgate University. Alexander, welcome to you too.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation.
And Alexander, you worked extensively on the politics of history in contemporary societies and on understanding historical dialogue and justice in transitional regimes, but also in established democracies and on the role of historical commissions in conflict mediation and reconciliation. So that's a wonderful background to explore the link between historical commissions and transitional justice, and especially how these operate in consolidated democracies. So I think as a starter to the conversation, it probably makes sense to kick off with a very general question to you, Sira, to just frame the discussion. If you can give us some more background about what are these historical commissions?
Yes. So historical commissions are investigative bodies which are established to clarify the historical facts that are surrounding injustices or crimes committed in the distant past. They work mainly, although not exclusively, with their archival sources, and they seek to understand the underlying processes and contextual conditions that have contributed to the development of the facts that they are investigating.
And you're saying in your book that these are not new phenomena, right?
No, they're not new. They were established throughout the 20th century, but they got a new interest throughout the 90s, coinciding with the end of the Cold War. These commissions have operated in different regions of the world and in very different social and political contexts. I explore this in detail throughout my book. For example, in Western European countries, such commissions were said to explore crimes of the Nazi regime and the collaboration of the occupied countries with the Nazi regime, which up to that time, it hasn't been explored. In Central European countries, for example, and in Baltic countries, the commissions were tasked to investigate both crimes of the Nazi and the Soviet regime to the population. There are other cases, for example, in Northeast Asia, where the commissions work to contribute to better diplomatic relations. Others, for example, have worked in conflict or post-conflict, cases, for example, in Colombia, where the commissions kind of work to understand the origins and causes and consequences of the conflict. And finally, as you were pointing out, these commissions have also worked in settler nations and more recently in post-colonial states to examine the legacies of colonialism and the impact that these have on structural inequalities in the present.
So that's, if I can interrupt you, that's a very diverse range of contexts that you're talking about. What makes these commissions so appealing? What do they do?
They are very appealing because they have a variety of functions that are very suitable to different contexts or different demands or needs of the context, right? So they work in many dimensions. They can work towards debunking ill-informed historical narratives, correcting the historical record, if you will, in the cases that it hasn't been investigated accordingly, or fostering diplomatic relations, addressing responsibilities for crimes and violations of human rights, acknowledgement of the past wrongdoing, redressing historical injustice, recognition. All these dimensions of the work of historical commissions can be adapted and can be tailored, if you will, to different contexts and different needs. But ultimately, the goal of these commissions is to work towards the recognition and moral or political accountability to achieve social change in the present.
Could you give us one example of, for example, a recent historical commission?
Yeah, one of the most recent examples, we can find it in Belgium, for example, with the Belgium Special Parliamentary Commission, which was set up in the summer of 2020 to investigate the impact of colonialism in Congo, Rwanda, and Burundi. It's important to note that although in this first reached out to experts, the commission carried out a historical investigation using the methodological approach of historical commissions, it was never called the historical commission, right? Instead, it was framed within the language and the logic of transitional justice.
I'm actually happy that you give that example because it's also a commission that we talked about a few months ago now with Dr. Liliana Mubiyeye in a previous episode of this podcast. And I recall that she was also explaining that even if the initial push to formally call this a truth commission in that case, that did not happen. But in practice, the work of this commission is still being framed very much within the logic of transitional justice, right? So it's, for example, in the public discourse, in newspapers, it's kind of being called that a truth commission, the logic of transitional justice is in the commission's mandate, it's in the outreach to experts, which all follow this kind of classic or logical for transitional justice pillar structure, right? True justice, reparations, guarantees of non-recurrence.
Exactly. And this might have consequences for the work of historical commissions, as they are expected to address or to fulfill these four pillars associated with the field, right? For example, truth-seeking processes within the logic of transitional justice, they are often associated with truth-telling of survivors, perpetrators, or bystanders. So within this understanding, within this logic, it might be expected as well that truth-seeking processes carried out by a historical commission also involve the collection of testimonies, even though that is not necessarily a standard procedure of these commissions.
It brings us to the question of the implications of framing these historical commissions in consolidated democracies as instances of transitional justice, and especially the implications for the field of transitional justice, I would say. Because just to be clear, these historical commissions, they are mechanisms that originated outside of the field of transitional justice. And so, Alexander, I wanted to ask you what you make of that, what you see as the logical connection between these historical commissions and, let's say, the broader field of transitional justice.
Yeah, you're right that these commissions, they originated outside of the TJ, the transitional justice framework. Some of the earliest commissions can be traced back to the beginning of the 20th century, but with the rising popularity of the historical commission model, with their return to prominence, I think we're starting to understand and see a fair bit of overlap with the transitional justice toolkit. You mentioned the four pillars of transitional justice, and I think there's a great deal in there that encompasses what the historical commissions aim to accomplish. These commissions, they are backward-looking. They're kind of a retrospective undertaking, looking back to the past to see what happened there and who is responsible, but they are also strongly oriented to the future. They look forward as well. So when these historical commissions think about the past, they're interested in clarifying the history, seeing if there is more we can learn about past violations, past violence, who's responsible. But it's not simply or purely a documentary undertaking. In addition to building this record, this documentary record, the commissions are concerned with what potential exists for repairing the damage and enacting justice where these violations and these instances of violence can be documented. So I think one of the principal reasons that the historical commissions are now sometimes framed in terms of transitional justice is that they, in a similar way to transitional justice, there is an effort to sort of link scholarship to advocacy. They're working to recognize patterns of violence and structures that have made past violations possible. But at the end of the day, I think these commissions are also about leveraging those insights for the purpose of reform and for change and for the enactment of justice.
What I find particularly interesting is that you're referencing these ideas of recognition, even guarantees of non-recurrence, social change here. One idea that I didn't specifically hear you mention is the idea of accountability, right? Which is also very much at the heart of a lot of what transitional justice initiatives are doing. And what, in a way, kind of the core normative objective of transitional justice is, right? And so I'm wondering what the kind of accountability is that a historical commission can contribute to, and maybe to ask the question a bit more explicitly, would you argue that the search for historical truth can be seen as part of the struggle for accountability?
I think that it is, but with the historical commissions, accountability may mean something slightly different. It's an aspect of their work, but it needs to be kind of it needs to be understood differently, I think, because the historical commissions, normally they are engaged with histories that are more distant than what Truth and Reconciliation commissions might be examining. So we're talking about, you know, events that transpired decades, if not centuries ago. And in these cases, it isn't always possible to hold perpetrators directly accountable, even if these individuals can be identified. Instead, what the historical commissions can do, I think, is clarify what structures enabled these individuals to act unjustly, to undertake and initiate unjust programs of violence. But they can also, at the same time, they highlight what legacies these actions from the past have left, and what enduring legacies remain to be reckoned with. So they can show us, for example, how state authorities have facilitated intergroup justice in the past. And while they don't always provide us the opportunity to prosecute or hold accountable the individuals responsible for those programs, they can help us understand how these violations have produced long-standing inequalities of wealth and power. And they can help us to think about how we might intervene in these cases to produce a kind of justice that would offer victims, certainly, a sense of accountability and acknowledgement.
I want to come back to that point about intervening in a structural manner in a moment. But for now, I actually want to push you a bit further on that notion of accountability, because it's really interesting to me, and I fully agree with you, that these historical commissions, indeed, they tend to deal with cases where the, let's say, if you want to call it that, the actual wrongdoer is no longer around, only their institutional afterlives. And even if that were the case, I mean, very often these commissions, they don't have a mandate to ensure that any kind of prosecution or negative repercussion writ large would actually take place. And that is an essential part, I think, of most of the working definitions of accountability, that you have that information that then leads, of course, to a negative consequence for the perpetrator, if you want to call it that. So is there, in your opinion, a risk in even using the notion of accountability when we're talking about these commissions? Are they, in other words, about something completely different?
I'm sure there are differences worth exploring, but I think my version of accountability is only a small distance away from the notion of accountability that you're talking about, holding perpetrators accountable. When I think of accountability, I'm thinking of a line from Plato about the meaning of justice. And Plato says in the Republic that justice is speaking the truth and giving each his or her due, giving what is due to each individual. And that can mean, on the perpetrator side, punishment for those who are responsible for wrongdoing. But the other side of that coin, I think, is giving to victims what is their due. And that's the version of accountability that I think the historical commissions address particularly well. A good example here is, from the American context, is the Tulsa Race Massacre from 1921. I won't get into the full history of that event, but it's an important event in U.S. history, and one that was not well understood or well known even until the 1990s. The state of Oklahoma, the state legislature in Oklahoma, launched a commission to research what happened in 1921 and how and why that event had sort of faded from public memory. The commission worked for several years. There was a report that was published in 2001, and the report was truly important for helping us to see and understand how city and state officials had mobilized and empowered a white mob to attack Tulsa's historically black Greenwood district. This was, you know, at one time referred to as a race riot, but it was more than that. And the report that the commission provided in 2001, it covered all of this. It showed how state officials had mobilized a mob. It showed also how those same officials had introduced policies after the attack that made it impossible for many Black Tulsans to rebuild the properties that were destroyed in this massacre or to recoup what losses they had suffered. The commission, historically speaking, it provides us a clearer understanding and glimpse into this event, but accountability today, right? This is an event that took place 101 years ago already. Accountability today, I think, means looking at survivors, their descendants, and what is due to them, what is owed to them. So in this case, the Tulsa Race Massacre Commission was crucial for facilitating reinvestment and development initiatives to rebuild and invigorate the African-American community in Tulsa that continues to feel the impacts of this event. That's a kind of accountability that I think the historical commissions offer and facilitate well.
So this is so fascinating to me because what you're describing in a way also fits very well within this whole paradigm shift that we've seen within the context of transitional justice and a move towards transformative justice, right? Or it's also about changing the structures that have led to the violence. I'm going to use that as a stepping stone to move on to another question that I wanted to ask you about this topic about paradigm shifts and in the domain of transitional justice and how those also kind of affect how, you know, we see historical commissions if they are now framed as transitional justice. And one thing I was thinking about specifically is the issue of victim participation, because I feel that as these historical commissions increasingly become framed as instances of transitional justice, they implicitly or explicitly, it also, they adopt the values, the operational models, the paradigms that reign the field of transitional justice. And I think victim participation is very much one of those values, if you will, or models that has come to really shape or characterize the field of transitional justice. And I feel that when it comes to victim participation, there's really a tension there, right? When we talk about historical commissions, or at least a potential tension in the sense that these historical commissions don't necessarily engage with victims themselves, for example, through, you know, collecting testimonies. They might, but they don't always. And I wanted to pick your brain about how you assess this, whether historical commissions are apt places for victim participation, whether we should strive for more victim participation, and how you assess that debate.
Well, a lot depends on which events we're talking about and how distant or how proximate these events are to the present. And it also, I think, really will depend on who we count as a victim. Returning to the U.S. context again, thinking about my own country. In the U.S., there's been a lot of discussion recently about how we teach the history of slavery, whether a historical truth commission in the U.S. could facilitate racial reconciliation or racial justice. And of course, you have some, you know, in this debate who argue that slavery was abolished a long time ago. What happened in the past ought to remain in the past, that the victims are no longer alive. So why should we be concerned with this history in any case? But if we shape that inquiry a little bit differently, and I think this is something that the historical commissions are really apt at, really do well, if they reshape the inquiry, if they broaden the purview a bit to think about other events before and after the main event. So, for example, where slavery in the U.S. is entailed, if you start to think about events later, like the failures of Reconstruction in the 19th century, or what policies the federal government introduced in the 20th century, policies which built wealth for white Americans but denied the same to black Americans. Or if you think about what racial inequalities are evident in today's criminal justice system, if you expand the purview in this way and broaden the inquiry, then I think that we can start to see how the enduring legacies of past choices, past failures, past injustices, how these legacies remain, and how there are still today victims of these enduring legacies. That can be done through personal testimony in some cases. You can, for example, in the earlier case I mentioned, the Tulsa race massacre, there was testimony taken from survivors, but it can be done also through a blend, a mixture of personal testimony, survivor testimony, and through scrutinization of historical records, archival documents. And I think, you know, some of the best commissions have combined both approaches, and I think that's a very good model for historical commissions going forward, to think about how they can involve victims where they are alive and accessible, how they can speak to a different kind of victimization where we are dealing with long legacies, enduring legacies of past injustice.
I would maybe want to zoom out a bit from what you're saying and also zoom out a bit from my last question, basically, and ask a rather broad question to both of you, which is whether and in which ways you think, in that sense, these historical commissions and the mixed methods or the different methods that they adopt, how those might be changing the field of transitional justice, how or whether even they might be leading to a new paradigm shift in the field of transitional justice?
Well, something that I think transitional justice has sometimes struggled with is just the messiness of the past and the way that episodes of peace and conflict bleed into one another. Transitional justice tools often want to, you know, frame past injustice with very concrete start and end dates in the mandates of truth and reconciliation commissions, for example. These commissions are often instructed that you should start in year X and your inquiry should end by year Y, that this interval and only this interval are of concern here. What the historical commissions do, I think, is look to broaden the inquiry, and they take an interest in antecedents and in precursors to the violations that TRC's Truth and Reconciliation Commissions might focus on narrowly. And as I was saying just earlier, they also are good ways to think about what reverberations and what legacies these events have. So I think what the historical commissions may help the field of transitional justice to understand is that you don't have sort of hard and fast dates that can be used to cleanly bracket injustice. There needs to be a willingness to think about how the conditions of injustice evolved and what legacies the injustice leaves going forward.
I agree completely with Alexander here. I think to tease a bit more his argument here, I think historical commissions do offer transitional justice these tools to address temporalities different. The investigations of historical commissions signal the unavoidable distance in between the present and the past. They do work towards identifying these lines of continuity that have contributed to the unfolding of these specific social, political, economic, and cultural junctures of today.
That's very interesting, and it actually also reminds me of an episode that we did on Chile just a couple of months ago, so we'll link to that in the show notes, which was also about this temporality and a need for longer temporal mandates. And I think it's a shift that you do see happening within the field of transitional justice as well. So at least that correlation between these two evolutions, I think, is very fascinating. We're approaching the end of this episode, so I'm just going to ask you the one question that we ask all our interviewees towards the end of a conversation, which is which evolutions you see happening around you that you think are promising in terms of how the field is evolving. And I think, Alexander, you already hinted at this combination of various methods being used, but I want to put it back there for the two of you, if you have any evolutions that you think are promising for the field of transitional justice as it relates to the use of historical commissions.
The one interesting thing that may be worth mentioning here is what historical commissions and what transitional justice tools more generally can mean in the context of what, you know, we call sometimes consolidated democracies. I think that we are seeing recently signs that consolidated democracy is never fully consolidated, and that the enactment of justice and the recovery of truth matters at all times, not just in so-called moments of transition in the immediate aftermath of violence or political oppression, but it matters at all times. I think that exercises like the ones historical commissions facilitate, these clarification exercises, these exercises in accountability, they are important for maintaining the functionality and the legitimacy of democracies. And so where we see states that are backsliding, where we see states losing traction on the democracy index, let's say, historical commissions can really provide an opportunity to engage with past injustices in a way that I think rearticulates and reinforces democratic ideals, and in a way that marks and commemorates instances of failure when the state has failed to deliver what it's promised, and in ways that help us envision a program of repair. And I think that's important in all democratic contexts, not just in the context of transition.
I will take more of a practical or methodological approach to my answer. As we have discussed today, consolidated democracies are increasingly turning to transitional justice to address the legacies of the colonial past. However, the context in which the transitional justice discourse and mechanisms are invoked is vastly different from those of post-conflict or post-authoritarian settings for which the transitional justice strategy was first developed. I believe that within this paradigm shift, there might be an opportunity for the field of transitional justice to turn to disciplines that might not have been part of the initial toolkit and adopt other methodologies that might fit better the demands of the context. For example, by turning into the work of historical commissions.
I really like that, both the kind of more paradigmatic thing that underlines, you know, the migration that you see of transitional justice to other fields that are non-transitional, if you will, or not transitional in the paradigmatic sense of the word, but then indeed also how we need to rethink our transitional justice toolkit, right? Because that thing has pretty much remained the same for a long time, and everything that didn't fit the paradigm, we moved it into the category of guarantees of non-recurrence. But I think indeed talking about these historical commissions, it also gives us a way to think about how within each pillar you have methodological innovations and deviations, if you will, that are possible that make the toolkit more context specific. So I think that's a very relevant thing to keep in mind and to keep exploring. So I'm going to just end by thanking you so much for this conversation. I really enjoyed it a lot. We will be back next month with a new episode. And until then, for our listeners, they can reread show notes for this episode on justicevisions.org, where we will also link to the different resources that were mentioned during the conversation. You can also follow us or like us on Spotify, Apple Music, and Anchor. Alexander, Sierra, thank you so much.
This was Justice Visions. To re-listen to this episode or to browse our archive, visit our website, justicevisions.org, or subscribe now via Spotify or Apple Music. Justice Visions is made possible through generous funding of the European Research Council.